Report is bringing you spooky fun. Thursday, October 31st from 7 p.m. to 1 a.m. Unleash your inner ghoul at Aportcalypse. Grab your best costume for a night of music and karaoke with Ruma the Entertainer. Then turn up with Pusha Jr., DJ One Time, and more at the after party. $10 gets you in on the scary action with contests and surprises all night long. Aportcalypse, it's gonna be scary good.
The future of driving is here, and it's electric. Welcome to EV City, Easy Car Sales' new home for electric vehicles. Whether you want an affordable model or a luxury ride, EV City has the perfect electric car for you. Don't just take our word for it. Come test drive the power, the smoothness, and the savings. You'll love electric after just one ride. Cut your driving costs in half and say goodbye to gas stations for good. Visit EV City on the highway through the Solomon Service Road and drive into the future today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Zombie dog. There is no star in the sky.
Good yawning this morning. Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Aaron Green on this Wednesday, the 30th of October. That means we are celebrating Halloween Eve today, although Halloween is already the eve of another important day. Halloween is the eve of All Souls. Is, and then some people call it All Saints Day. I have to go back to my notes from last year, Halloween season. But thank you for joining me this morning. I hope you had a good time yesterday with Dr. Cleveland Enius III, a.k.a. Kahun Anku Sarah. Today I have joining me in studio Senator Barry Griffin and from the Office of the Prime Minister, and we will be discussing a new program coming out of the office of the Prime Minister. And then after that, of course, it's Halloween Eve, and you still have one day to figure out how you're going to deliver all of this Halloween candy to me. In the next hour, I saw that the Bureau of Standards was in studio. I'm glad they're here because some of y'all don't understand that we have a national standard for Halloween candies and trick-or-treating. I hope you all have read up on that policy. But again, joining me in studio is Senator Barry Griffin. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Aaron. Thank you for having me here on the show. Very excited to be with you this morning.
In what capacity do you sit in the OPM's office?
So I'm actually Deputy Chairman of the Bahamas Trade Commission and also Deputy of the National Trade Facilitation Committee. So the National Trade Facilitation Committee is a new committee that's out of the office of the Prime Minister, and it brings together all of the relevant government agencies and departments that have a hand in trade. So that would be Ministry of Economic Affairs, Ministry of Transport, Ministry of Aviation, Ministry of Agriculture, etc. So now we have an umbrella sort of organization or committee that organizes all of our national and international trade
elements of those agencies for the purpose of this specific sector.
So for the purpose of the sector largely, and so it deals with everything from, example, customs, ensuring that we are up with the top international standards in customs. It deals with national ports, so making sure that, for example, the Port of Ski dock, meets national and international standards. Also, the Ministry of Economic Affairs, that our trade policies, our tariffs, and everything are meeting international standards, that we are abiding by the trade agreements that we would have signed. So it's sort of an umbrella kind of committee that ensures that all of the parts that make trade, national, international, tick, and like clockwork, that they're all working together.
Absolutely. When you said Potter's Key Dock, right, it reminded me, Potter's Key Dock is an international port.
It's a port.
It receives boats from Bahamian territory.
Correct. And what a lot of Bahamians don't know is that it's one of our, I would say, most important ports, because it's the one that in particular services the Family Islands. And so when goods from abroad come into the Bahamas that are intended for the Family Islands, they would go there. Or even if they, for example, go to Freeport or another port first, they would then be redirected to Potter's Key for outward shipping to the Family Islands.
Right.
So it's extremely important.
A coordination of elements that reduces the cost for the most vulnerable, which would be Family Island residents, right, at the bottom of the chain. So you're reducing some of the internal shipping costs if it can come straight to Potter's Key, and there's a simple payloader or what is a small boy to take the parcels and put it on another boat.
Correct. And it also streamlined the process in the sense that many of the Family Islands have smaller ports and docks that aren't able to handle big boats, and so you would see things offloaded at Potter's Key Dock, go into Smith, etc., for onward shipping to other Family Islands. So it really is a very important logistical hub. You know, traditionally, we know Potter's Key Dock, you know, for me growing up, is Kong Salad and family time on the weekends, but it really is a logistics hub for trade.
Absolutely. And the days that you see it most would be that week before Good Friday.
Okay, yep.
The week before Good Friday, you see the level of trade that takes place on Potter's Key Dock.
Yeah, even now we're anticipating a busy holiday season, because the economic numbers in the trade statistics show us that there's increased economic activity on the Family Islands. And so we expect that, you know, for the holiday season, that's going to continue. So we expect there to be extremely busy coming up to Thanksgiving and Christmas as well.
Absolutely. So some of the key partners you mentioned, this Bahamas Trade Commission and then the National Trade Facilitation Committee. They sort of sit as the coordinating mechanisms, right?
Correct, correct.
Then the Bahamas Chamber of Commerce and Employers Federation.
Yep. So now we're talking about the program that we're talking about. So the National Trade Diversification Program.
Okay. So let's go back.
Yep.
This conversation we had about Potter's Key, the first thing it made me think was, I could start a logistics business, but I need to key into this program to determine what types of logistics needs exist currently, and with the new program, what types of logistics options could I provide for participants specifically and other business people generally to facilitate trade?
Correct. So just to go back a little bit and give sort of an overview of the program. So the program we're talking about is called the National Trade Diversification Program.
Okay.
And this is a program essentially from the government's one, lower the cost of goods / the cost of living in the Bahamas, and two, support local businesses to be more competitive. And so on the first issue is, we all live in this country. We all see the rising prices at the till, whether we're in a grocery store, variety store, everywhere. And so the idea is that there are lots of myths and some truths around why things in the Bahamas are so expensive. And so one of the things in the government's sort of overall strategy is diversifying trade. We are heavily dependent on trade from the United States, and in particular, trade from Florida. Mm-hmm. So most of the goods in the country come from a very limited number of suppliers and manufacturers, which means that there's a certain level of price stagnation, that there's very little room to sort of negotiate prices. We're locked in.
Even though it looks massive from the outside, like how I look like size Andrus on the outside, but my heart is size Rumkey, right?
Correct.
It's almost like a closed market.
Essentially, so it's a cluster of, yeah, you know, certain businesses that, that get business from the Bahamas or even a certain region. And so in that sort of respect, we're very sort of tied in. And so the trade diversification program is intended for us to take advantage of our great relationships around the world, the trade agreements that we're a part of, the bilateral relationships we have, and diversify that trade. So, for example, we're heavily focused on Latin America and the Caribbean. We have great relationships in Latin America and the Caribbean. And so where possible, we want to educate Bahamian companies that, hey, there are these avenues to buy these products at a much lower rate and sometimes even at a greater quality than where we're currently getting it from. And we want them to explore those opportunities.
Me too, because I have a friend in Guyana and they're vegan. And so they're regularly, and they're an advocate, so they're regularly featuring the expansion of the agricultural, showing us all the things they could just cook up in a pot and don't have to go to a they could go to the corner store. I'm ready for it.
So, I mean, you know, people who would travel the Caribbean, we know that countries such as Guyana, Trinidad, and Jamaica, they are great with producing, they're great in agribusiness. So they're great in producing agricultural products, but also, for example, snack food products. Many Bahamians love the plantain chips and the banana chips, for example. They're heavily produced in the Caribbean. These are things that we can import to diversify the selection. So you could have Lay's chips from the United States, and you could have a Jamaican brand plantain chip and a Guyanese brand, you know, banana chip.
And just like, let's, a cultural aspect, South America, they have a lot of ruminant. They have a lot of beef herding. They do a lot of beef production. So they have a lot of milk.
So,
and I realize they get a lot of cheese products. And every time I go further south in the region, you know, I'm looking for chips, snack food. They're not what I'm used to seeing on my shelf. But the variety of cheese doodles. Listen, they're Bahamas. The variety of cheese doodles. The types of products. Right? Because they have this a surplus of dairy. Right? And so if you, like my neighbor, grandson, if you're a cheese doodle aficionado, right, then exploring these southern markets.
And so that's part of what we want to do. We want to not only lower price, but we want to add that diversity to the Bahamian market. And I'm glad you brought up sort of the meat industry, because that's one of the huge industries. Our stats show that meat and poultry, so I mean beef, pork, and poultry, they're about 20% more expensive than they need to be because we buy them through U.S. intermediaries. So a lot of people don't know that most of the meat that we consume in this country comes from countries like Brazil, but they come through American intermediaries. So that's a 20% additional sticker tag on the cost. But if we cut the middleman out and buy directly from Brazil, for example, or buy directly from Ecuador, it's immediately 20% you know, less expensive.
I'm ready to cut the middle goat out, sir. I want to send a herd of Bahamian goats to Paraguay or Europe, somewhere where they go, where the goats go in.
And they learn and from them.
Right, but I want you to, I want to start a farm there where I know the costs are going to be lower. I have a greater option for agricultural space and different types of herding, right? As opposed to the sort of rough bush herding we do here. Goats, I ain't mad at you. I like you. But I just want to know what you could do in some lush.
So that's another conversation that we're actually having. So we'll save that for another time.
Okay.
But what you just said is sort of one version of what we call nearshoring. So nearshoring is when, for example, a Brazilian farm realizes that there's a market that they want to tap in the US or the Bahamas. And so they bring that expertise to the Bahamas. So it's essentially having a Brazilian farm in the Bahamas that's using, they bring their cattle, their herd, they, you know, do it by their practices that they do there, and they sell to our market. Or the reverse is exactly what you're saying, where a Bahamian goes to Brazil, for example, and invests in a farm, does everything there, but the product that is made is intended for direct shipping to the Bahamas market. So those are things that we are discussing for some, you know, long-term prospects. But everything we're discussing is part of diversifying trade, taking advantage of these relationships. Every country has a particular expertise. We're experts in tourism and financial services. Banks come here. Hotels come here. People come here to look to us for training. So now we're going to other parts of the world and saying, why is your milk so inexpensive? We want to buy that. Your cheese, your tuna, your beef, your poultry. And so we want the Bahamian business sector to sort of be more educated on that so that they're pulling from more variety of sources so that there's more variety in products on the market. But again, big for the government right now is that we lower the cost of these products.
Absolutely. There's so many cultural aspects to talk about, but I don't want to get this program will be primarily identifying new sources or more efficient and effective sources and spaces for trade.
So right? all of the above. So what we like to say is this is a government supported initiative.
Right.
So this initiative will be private sector driven. And so you've already touched on some of our partners. We're partnering with the Chamber of Commerce. We're partnering with the Small Business Development Center. And government partners include BASFA, which is the Food Health Safe Health and Safety Authority, and also Customs, for example, and Consumer Affairs.
Now, just now walking out of the studio was the Bureau of Standards.
Standards Bureau, correct.
Right.
And so, you know, through the Ministry of Economic Affairs, they're involved as well. So just to put off the bat that all of these sort of new products that we're looking at bringing into the country, they're going to have to meet the exact same standards and requirements that the goods from the U.S. are meeting. So there's nothing that would affect quality, for example. They would have to meet the exact same standards.
Absolutely. Now, Halloween is the perfect time to talk about that, right? Because I could wash my clothes with practically any detergent, right? I could wash my dishes with practically any soap. When it comes to bathing and skincare products, I'm more specified, right? I want particular things. But when it comes to candy, right? Are you telling me now? I grew up all my life eating these candy from the States and Britain, right? The Mars and the this and the that. And now you're going to start bringing in candy from South America? I don't know about none of these candies, right? Like, I could imagine the space used to new candies, right? And I could hear a little churin saying right now, Mommy, let's go back to the house and get him back these candies because these ain't real candies. This ain't the candies that I used to.
I mean, well, I think there's obviously going to be a certain level of that in terms of, you know, products being tested to see if it even works in this market. But, for example, that happens all the time. Gatorade that you drink in the U.S. isn't the same Gatorade that you drink in Europe. It's a different formula because people's palates are different. So I think there's going to be a certain level of that in terms of Bahamians testing out new products to see if it actually sort of works in this jurisdiction. But the funny thing is that we've also found is a lot of these products that are on the international market are made by the same international companies and just sent around the world in terms of different brands. So, for example, you spoke about cleaning products. Tide, for example, is sold around the world under different brands. The exact same formula, exact same product. In the US, you're going to buy Tide. In the UK, you're going to buy Ariel. In Latin America, you're going to buy Daz. Completely different branding, but literally the exact same product.
Same thing with potato chips. Apparently, there are very few producers of potato regions and districts. You'll find that there are a couple of major companies. And they're producing the chips for all of the companies. So when you're sitting there saying, I don't like how that, I prefer how this tastes, it's practically the same, made in the same machine.
And again, hygiene products as well. We know that there are a few international conglomerates like, Palmolive and things like that, that Procter & Gamble that make these products around the world. And so the same Colgate toothpaste you have here, it's literally sold around the world just under different brands. So, for example, we had a trade mission to Brazil recently where we got to, in particular, see the meat industry, but other industries. One of the interesting things that I saw was a factory that was making Listerine, literally pumping out the exact same bottles, but different packaging to ship around the world. So it's Listerine in the U.S., but it's something else that's going to the Middle East, for example, under a different brand. So literally the exact same product made in the exact same factory, just being shipped out to different parts of the world. And so being sort of keen and savvy, we want to take advantage of that. We want to say, okay, you're used to buying Tide, try Daz. It's literally the same product. But again, we know people in the Bahamas tend to be brand conscious for some products. And so we only want to introduce variety. So if you still want to go to your particular store and buy Tide, you can do that. But if you say, let me try Daz, because you all say it's the same thing and it's a little cheaper, then you are able to do that as well.
Now, listen, I have a cousin in Mozambique, right?
Okay.
I mean, we just met, but we are definitely
but
cousins.
That's your cousin.
That's my cousin.
Okay.
And they tell me they could ship me all kind of palm oil. They tell me they could send me the palm oil, right? I just meet this boy. I mean, his last name is Green. My last name is Green. We got to be cousins, right? How are we going to protect the end user from, let's not even worry about unscrupulous, mm-hmm. but problematic, ineffective. I don't want to import malfeasance, right?
Correct.
But just say that they are not, they're substandard. They're not hitting the quality standards mm-hmm. in our region. How are you going to protect me in my little corner store? Because mm-hmm. I don't even have a car. Mm-hmm. I know what you're saying. Go to the store where the familiar brands. I don't have a car. Mm-hmm. I go into this corner store.
Because they're close.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. and they understand how my money work.
Mm-hmm. So the idea is that these substandard products wouldn't even make it to the Bahamas. So as I said before, the same standards that products mm-hmm. from the U.S. would have to meet to get here are the same standards whether you import from Ghana, Nigeria, Mozambique, Brazil, Argentina, or China.
Mm-hmm.
And so BASFA, for example, in terms of food, the Bureau of Standards in terms of
non-consumables, other,
exactly, they would need to meet the exact same standards. So for raw materials such as the raw palm, applications and standards it has to meet. And so one of the things that these agencies would do, they would first see the country of origin. That country of origin, their relevant ministry or authority would need to provide something to us to say that this business is registered. This is how we do this product in this country. And we'll see if that meets our standards.
Before we allow them
correct,
to export it to you.
Before they can even export it to us or a company in the Bahamas can import it. So, so for example, how that works, practically speaking is I'll use meat, for example, or we can continue using the palm oil. They'll provide the ministry. The ministry knows, the relevant authority here in the Bahamas knows our standards, which, to be honest, most times align more closely with American standards.
Okay.
Yeah. There are some areas where it kind of differs a little bit, but for the most part, American standards. Now, some countries meet those standards and some don't. And so where it doesn't meet those standards, they would be denied and they would not be able to enter the country.
Okay, but they'll be denied before they leave the country of origin.
Before.
I need you to protect me. I need your help, right? The guy's saying, because once it lands here, my money's already spent.
Well, in most cases, so for example, for food products, before they leave that country.
Okay.
And in other instances, for example, if it's a product that's already sort of registered in the Bahamas, where it has a quality control would be at customs, where the relevant agencies kind of look at it and determine mm-hmm. if it can then leave the port. And if it doesn't meet the requirements at that point, then it doesn't leave.
Now, what's the criteria on this side in the local jurisdiction for Partis program?
Yep. So the criteria is literally a business that wants to take part in the program. So we have town halls this week, actually tonight at the SBDC location on Gladstone Road at 6:30 p.m. And also tomorrow night, SBDC Gladstone Road at 6:30 p.m. as well.
And that's the old Phil's building?
The old Phil's building. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be providing more information, but essentially the two sort of sectors we're targeting now initially as the program starts mm-hmm. would be the food and beverage sector. So grocery stores, convenience stores, variety stores, pharmacies.
Okay.
And the second sector that we're targeting right now would be the construction sector. So contractors, developers, hardware stores, building supply stores.
Right.
Because we've found that those are the two big industries that Bahamians complain that the prices are too high. You know,
right.
People want to build, get on the property ladder, commercial buildings and things like that. Investors want to do things here. Construction is expensive here.
And I find that these are also the two spaces that require the most oversight, right? Where we, the citizen, demand, well, we'd say we demand, but we request, we need more, right? Because at the end of the day,
we need the government at that point to create the regulatory environment so you know
right.
the cement that's being imported isn't going to fizzle down
and
when some hard rain come
yeah.
and that the food you eat isn't going to send you to the hospital.
And the medicine that you get does what it says it's going to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So just to sort of speak about the program in more detail. So the idea of the program is it's government supported. So we are literally introducing Bahamian businesses to international suppliers. So manufacturers and producers of goods in the food and beverage industry and in the construction and building supply industry. And so where you, as a small business, you're ordering sort of alone by yourself and you don't get the advantage of bulk orders. What we've done is we've talked to these suppliers and just to sort of simplify it, all orders that come from the Bahamas will be bulked together. So it's not like you have to come together with all the stores in your community and sit down and say, hey, this would we order in. No.
Even though that may be a good strategy. Let me aside it.
Yep.
That may be a good strategy.
There are advantages to that. But right. In particular with the construction industry, we found that there are lots of moving parts. You have time to sit down with nobody and wait for no order. You need to order when you need it because your suppliers need to be there in a particular time to meet your requirements. So in that case, you order separate as an individual from the suppliers. But guess what? There's 10, 15, maybe 100 or 500 other companies ordering at the exact same time. So when those orders go to the international supplier, they are bulked together. You get the advantage of the lower cost because they're providing this as a Bahamas price. You also get the advantage of lower shipping and freight costs because all of these are shipped to the Bahamas together. And so that, as a government, we can do those negotiations. We can provide that framework. But again, the business, you are still buying the products on your own.
You're talking to the vendors directly.
You verifying everything directly. You putting in the order by yourself. You coordinating your shipping.
Go ahead. And I was just going to say the government is going to
basically facilitate that process in terms of negotiating prices beforehand as far as possible. Pointing people to particular verified manufacturers and producers in these countries.
Verified vendors, right?
Correct.
These are people that are trustworthy, are recognized by the U.S. government as trustworthy businesses.
Well, it wouldn't be the U.S. government because those aren't American companies.
Oh.
But for Brazil, for example, we met directly with the Ministry of Trade, the Ministry of Agriculture, and they have their approved vendors. So companies that have been certified to export products, etc., they meet all the local requirements. And so they're certified by their foreign government and their relevant authorities. And then the Bahamas then does our certification to say, these goods meet our Bahamian standards. And so we now are saying, have a look at these vendors. You can order. We've spoken to them. So all the Bahamian orders kind of get the bulk pricing, you know, and they're all shipped together. And so have lower cost products that in turn, we expect the cost savings to be given on to the end consumer.
Okay, so two things. Again, my criteria for participation, I just need to be a legitimate, properly structured business.
Here in the Bahamas, correct.
I have to be a Bahamian business. I can't be a Bahamian that opened a business in the U.S. and now I want to come and take advantage of this program in the Bahamas.
No, this is for businesses that are here,
domiciled in the Bahamas.
In the Bahamas, that service the local economy.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is awesome. All right. Regulations.
Mm-hmm.
This program attempts to reduce costs by enhance or opening, growing your sources for goods, right?
Mm-hmm.
Regulations. Now that the business person has gotten a sweet deal, they've reduced their prices as much as possible, how are we going to ensure that they pass that saving on to me?
So that's a part of being in the program. So there's a MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, that all of the businesses that are a part of the program will sign. And basically they're agreeing to the ethos of the program that the government is facilitating this for the purposes of lowering costs. And so to get into the specifics of the overall MOU, but they're expected to pass on those cost savings to the consumers, not expected to eat those in profit, and they're expected to stay competitive with the current market price.
Okay.
And so to facilitate that, for example, as you would be aware, you have price inspectors that already go around to the stores to look at prices. And so they're also from the Consumer Affairs Department engaged in this program. So they will continue to monitor prices to ensure that prices are going down. And it will just be an ongoing process in the program of speaking to the stores, etc., to ensure that the government is doing all it can do to ensure that those price changes are then reflected and given on to the consumer.
And it's not a punitive program, right? So I imagine that if an inspector feels like the costs aren't being passed on, then you have a meeting with the business and say, well, look, let us know what are the barriers
exactly
to reducing the cost.
And so again, part of this program is also empowering small businesses. So we're working with the Chamber of Commerce and the Small Business Development Center to empower these businesses. So we want them to be able to compete more in this marketplace.
Right.
And so we're doing a number of other things to work along with them to ensure that they can compete. But again, yes, it will be an ongoing process of the government sort of working with these small businesses to ensure that they have everything they need to compete and then pass on those savings to the Bahamian consumer.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, I have a question. We're going to get text. I see a question. It's about for export only, mm-hmm. right? And so here's my thing. If I'm participating in this program, mm-hmm. I'm a manufacturer, a producer of goods, mm-hmm. and so I am accessing raw products or a part of the production, right? So I'm producing it here, and I want to export to Haiti, Jamaica, mm-hmm. Turks, mm-hmm. would I have to put a for export only label on that product because, like have you all gone that far yet in the policy development? Because I'm a manufacturer, I want to take advantage of this. I want to be able to export what I'm making to another country. Because of the program, would we then now start to see like for export only, indicating that there's a particular tax bracket, right? There's a particular.
You mean for products made here in the Bahamas,
yeah.
or products that we're receiving?
No, so it's products made in the Bahamas with products that I will receive through the program.
Mm-hmm.
So some of my products are imported, some of my products are local,
yeah.
but the intention is to export.
Okay, so as far as I'm aware, the answer to that would be no, but I will take that back to the team because this is a question definitely for the Bureau of Standards and the Ministry of Economic Affairs. But as we stand now, for the majority of products made in the Bahamas, there currently isn't a mandated for export mm-hmm. Criteria outside of the beverage industry in terms of alcohol. But I'll check on that and get back to you.
I get ready to export Chikchanis. I just say I get ready to export mm-hmm. Chikchanis. But I don't know what the country start getting upset about it, right? I just want them to know
The government endorse it.
I mean, but not yet. I'm not a part of the program.
You got to tell us where you find your Chikchani.
Man, it's a secret. Maybe I found it in Andres. Maybe.
Yeah.
I can't tell you where all my Chikchani farms are. So again, town hall meeting tonight.
Tonight at 6:30 p.m. SBDC. The meeting tonight is targeted toward the food and beverage industry, so grocery stores, retailers, variety stores, pharmacies, etc. Even we're inviting representatives from hotels and restaurants, etc., because they can benefit from this bulk purchasing as well.
All right. What about
tomorrow? Is yeah. intended for contractors, developers, hardware stores, building supply stores. But really, you can come to any meeting because the information is going to be very similar.
Right. If you can't make Halloween because you're busy
trick-or-treating,
making sure Aaron have candy, come out to Wednesday. Because I was just thinking, we have not a proliferation, but we've seen a number of smoke shops
okay.
in town, right, where they sell
vapes
and pens. You should come out to this meeting?
This is for the import of all of those kinds of goods that you would find in a pharmacy, a gas station, a supermarket. So they can come out. So here's how we're working the program. We've already been, so this program didn't just come out of the air. We've been working on this program for the last 3 years, going to these countries, meeting with governments, meeting with these manufacturers. So a lot of these suppliers are people we've been on the ground to and we've met.
Okay.
We've also been talking to businesses over the last 3 years. And so we already have a list of products that we've sourced. Businesses have said, these are the products that are flying off the shelves. These are the products that consumers find to be most expensive that we need cost savings on. So we've gone out and we've sourced suppliers for these products. So when they come to the meeting, they're going to see a list of these products. They're going to see suppliers for these products, prices for these products, and say, okay, this is beating the price to get at, or no, this ain't really beating the price. My, you know, my plug in Miami is getting me this cheaper already. Mm-hmm. So they can decide what products they're interested in getting. Now, the flip side of that is we know that as an ongoing process, there are going to be products that should be added to the list. And so when they come there, we also want them to give us their list of what they think we should be importing. So you use the vape example of a vape shop come there and say, I currently get my vapes from Miami. They mm-hmm. charge in this. We can then say, you know, and again, it has to be on the government's approval list. I'm not sure if vape yeah. shopping and would just, be for the government.
Let me just,
but we're just using that as an example.
Yeah. I even encouraging vaping, but I think that that space requires heavy
regulation. Well, the Minister of Health already said that there's intended regulations to regulate that industry. So a few months ago, he would have said that very publicly in the press. And yeah. so that's coming.
There's a health intersection.
There's a health issue.
Yeah, it's
that.
Not moral.
But again,
health.
Just using it as the umbrella kind of thing, if there's a sort of unique kind of store that sells a particular type of product, and they want to say, hey, we want to see if we can source this product from somewhere else. They can come to the meeting. If it's not on our list, they provide us with the specs of the product. And then we go out and try to source that product and say, okay, we have Colombia, in Argentina, and in Ghana. These are their rates. Is this appealing to you?
I'm glad you said Ghana because chocolate. I just say it, right? I have a problem. Mm-hmm. It's called I love chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
But it's... The problem isn't that I love chocolate, it's that I can't stop eating it.
Mm-hmm.
And that to protect local candy makers, we have a very high duty set for the importation of chocolate, right? So I understand the need for the duty to protect the local vendors, right? Mm-hmm. I just need any way to get the cost of chocolate down.
So I'm glad you mentioned Ghana. There was a trade mission to Ghana about 3 years ago, so yeah. very plugged in. With the government of Ghana. I don't want to give too many specifics or speak out of turn, but there's also a Bahamian company that's now based in Ghana that will be shipping products from Ghana to the Bahamas. And that Bahamian company is part of this program as well. And so we even intend to have reach into Africa. But in Ghana, we're seeing really great prices. For example, the raw products are going to come cement.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing that even with the long travel, that we can still get it here with a reasonable amount of time and a very cost competitive price. Also, the raw materials that go into making tourist products, for example. So in Ghana, they make these really cool dolls that they do for tourism. And mm-hmm. so we found that we can get the fabric, the stuffing, and all of that, bring them here, and then have the finished product made here, for example, by our artists and mm-hmm. made into little dolls here for our tourists. And so we're finding that a lot of raw materials that can be used in the production of goods for the tourism industry and the construction industry in particular are mm-hmm. going to be good coming out of Ghana.
And the feminine hygiene protection industry. If I could source some cotton, some quality organic or pesticide-free, chemical-free mm-hmm. cotton safely over the timeline, right, with minimal interference in terms of protectants, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the cost of feminine hygiene protection is just exorbitant.
So what's funny about that is, like I told you before, we've been talking to suppliers, and it's interesting that one of the local distributors, after we gave our list and say, these are the things we've already procured, the one thing they came back and said, and I could read you a text message almost word for word.
Yeah.
If you can find cost-effective, environmentally friendly, etc., feminine hygiene products, they say a line, you know, and they listed all of the products that would be required. Mm-hmm. They say if you could find that, that would be extremely beneficial.
Listen, perfect example. I tell you why. Of course, it's my personal anecdotal observation as a woman who has had to focus on this issue for 35 years, basically.
Mm-hmm.
We import from specific, not just regions, but distribution networks,
correct.
Right? The businesses. And so on a trip to the U.S. one time, in the store, I had to buy feminine hygiene protection. And this is my experience. In the Bahamas, the only place you can find Super Plus tampons are in bigger grocery stores.
Okay.
The convenience stores, the mom and pop stores, and even some of the pharmacies only carry regular and super. right? And so the standard is regular, super, super plus.
Okay.
And then I found out, and you look at the box and you see there's an ultra or a maxi on it. There's another size,
mm-hmm.
a larger absorbency that is just not available in this market. When you speak to the buyers in the stores, they look at you and say, oh, we don't get that in this market, mm-hmm. right? And so to access that particular product, you have to order that yourself. Or you have to make a trip, buy a whole bunch of boxes, and then stuff them in your luggage and mm-hmm. smile at the customs officer and hope they just mm-hmm. too embarrassed mm-hmm. to count them all.
Yep.
This is a problem, not just because as a whole sovereign citizen of the world and I should be able to access something that's sold right next door,
yep.
but because we in the Bahamas and maybe in other Caribbean nations have a lot of issues with women's menstrual health,
mm-hmm.
excessive bleeding in particular. And so women need products with greater absorbency. They exist, but the businesses do not import them, despite the great need.
Mm-hmm. And so again, as I said, one of the reasons for the program is to bring that variety and diversity that you're talking about. And so now the small corner store that previously didn't have access to a large distributor company in another country, they will now have that and they would be able to purchase and bring these sort of things in. So, for example, right now we found that a lot of the smaller local stores, they fly to Miami, go to the same Walmart and Sam's that you would go to,
mm-hmm.
buy at that price, and then bring here, and then have to put up the price. And so that's one of the reasons prices are higher. But mm-hmm. when you go directly to the manufacturer of that product or a similar product, you're able to get it in cheaper, but also able to access their full line of products that you mm-hmm. may not see in that one Sam's or Walmart that you go to procure goods. And so they are able to, sort of get that variety. But again, it through the town halls and speaking to people like you, I'm obviously a little uneducated on the feminine hygiene, you know, because you're saying heavy and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm here pretending like I know exactly what you say. But when you come to the town halls and you say things like that, we have folks there taking notes. And so now we will have that on our list to procure. When we're looking for feminine hygiene products, we say, make sure you give us the Maxi and the Ultra and all of that.
The distributor will know, right?
They will know, exactly. Yeah. And so the cost and price of that full line of products, we provide it to the businesses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is where the support and empowerment of these businesses come. We will say, you know, our research, we'll do a little bit more research. We say, our research has found that there's a group of women here in the country who require this level of protection, the Maxi or the Ultra, and they say they're not getting it at the big stores. Why don't you be the tester to see if you bring this in, if they will come and purchase this, and you could be the plug for this that women will come to and get this because they know they can get it mm-hmm. at the bigger stores. And so we'll also be providing that kind of information on tracking how products are doing as well.
Okay, good morning. I got a couple of texts here.
Okay.
They referenced Walmart,
mm-hmm.
and I think in the same way that you did. I want to reference this point. I was stunned because I've grown up ontologically American.
Okay.
Right? I've grown up waking up, rolling out of bed, and expecting to have the same experience the kids have on the television when they roll out of bed, mm-hmm. right? Same experience kids have at lunchtime, mm-hmm. at the park, mm-hmm. the delivery. And it took me a while to realize
that I had life. Yeah, trust me, I experienced that now today.
Walmart will not set up a store in an area with a population size as small as the Bahamas.
Correct.
Like, I'm as a whole country, I have a whole Sydney Poitier
mm-hmm.
behind me, right? Like, these real people.
Mm-hmm.
But Walmart does not even see us. We do not exist to them.
Too small. And even in the United States, that's the case. If you look, sometimes a Walmart or an IKEA would be in a far-off field somewhere, a huge warehouse, because they put it in the middle of population. Say, this town too small, that town too small, that town too small. But if we put it here, all three of y'all can access that. So you got to drive 20 minutes mm-hmm. to the nearest Walmart. And the reality is, one of the reasons for doing this program in this way is because we are a small market. Because each individual convenience store and grocery store is buying it on their own, essentially, you're paying the highest level of price you can pay. You're essentially buying at retail prices. But when you get that bulk ordering to a level that international suppliers consider a wholesale order or a bulk order, then you begin to experience those cost savings.
Mm-hmm.
Because even, for example, the largest store here by itself, that may not be considered a bulk order for a company in Brazil. Brazil is one of the largest countries in the world, and they ship to some of the largest countries in the world. So when you come with your order for 50,000 something and you think that's saying something, they just had an order of 1 million from another country. So we really need to bulk these orders together to get some of that cost savings.
I would say to my boy, remember how the guy in the liquor store laughed at us when we asked for a discount on 2 cases of beer?
All right.
The boy laughed at us.
He say, a dude by himself can buy 2 cases of beer for him and his family. You know, that's not a big order to them. And so that's how it works on the international market, whether we like it or not. And because we're a small country, we're going to have to sort of grapple with that.
Absolutely. The cultural shifts. Okay, so a text here says, are solar products considered items for trade and sourcing in this program?
Absolutely. And I will say that we have met with Absolar. You can Google that. That's the association in Brazil that represents all of the solar companies. So, you know, they make solar components in Brazil. They also sell solar systems, and they're one of the only countries that are competing with China. So on a lot of things, they can't compete with China on price, but a lot of things they are, in particular, the solar battery. A lot of Chinese companies actually have to buy the battery from Brazil. So I'm just using that as an example. We've already spoken to solar companies in Brazil, and that is part of the project. So just to give you a long-term view of the project, we're starting with food and beverage industry and construction, but if the program is successful, like we think it will be, the idea is to expand to virtually every product that we import into the country. We want to completely diversify trade and bring down the cost of everything we can. And so if this person who texted you has a business interest in the solar industry, we can make that connection to them,
okay,
for them.
All right. So a text, I think you answered the question before, but the text came in very late. So I want to reiterate that answer. Good morning. Considering we have no antitrust laws here, are there any policies in place that prevent the usual suspects from monopolizing on imported products and lead the prices?
This is my first time on your show, and your callers must be some of the brightest callers. I'm happy they asked this question. So as I said before, this program is just one part of the government's strategy to tackle the cost of living. And so they didn't say in so many words, but they have hit on the head one of the problems we've found, that there is a lack of competition in the market here in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. We have a few players that dominate industries. And so that's why for this program, we're heavily trying to support small businesses so that they can compete where some of the larger players are not competing. Mm-hmm. And so two other things that we're doing to ensure that this competition in the market is, one, that the caller is suggesting bringing those antitrust laws here. And so largely in the world speaking, they're called competition laws. The U.S. calls it antitrust. But the idea is that, you know, this is also actually part of our international commitments that we've made to start a competition authority here in the Bahamas. So we're bringing legislation to regulate competition in the Bahamas. And the third, so the trade diversification program is one. Competition legislation is another thing. And the third thing is we will also be introducing a price comparison portal. One of the things to people in particular, the people in the home who do the shopping, so it tended to be the mothers or the grandmothers or the caretakers, they say when they have to find deals on products, they got to drive to each store to figure out what the price is. Most companies don't have their prices on a website. Mm-hmm. As we said before, the Consumer Affairs Department, through their price inspectors, they collect this information on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. We're going to put that information in an online database so any Bahamian will be able to check the prices of a myriad of products from their phone. You can search by geographic location. You can search by store name. You can also search by product type. So again, that's providing competition. So everybody could see what tuna costs at 10 different places.
Yeah. Southeast, Southwest.
Exactly.
High end, low end.
Exactly. Yeah. You decide where to go to get it.
Dear business owners, now is the time to tell your staff, right? Because a lot of your staff members make us feel like, well, if you don't want to come here to find out what the price is, you must see, don't want to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from Auckland. I'll never buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I get to the gate and Peter will say, Miss Green, go back because you forget to bring the thing I asked you for. And I could tell him, Peter, they must see, don't want you have that because I ain't going back. You can send me wherever you're sending me, but I ain't going back there. And they miss out on the cultural aspect of us, mm-hmm. right? But now the thing that you dislike the most becomes the thing that is your advantage. If you're willing, because people say, oh, they're willing to put their prices out there.
Mm-hmm.
They, that puts their prices out there will gain an advantage, a degree of trust. Like, there's the first to do it. Okay, I'm with them.
Yeah, and we want that because that for us, that sparks competition. We want that transparency. So part of this trade process is more transparency. We want people to be able to openly see what prices are across products, across the country, so consumers can make more informed decisions. But we think in turn, that's going to spur more competition in the market because sometimes a business can get a lot of advantage from a slight price change. One of the reasons we also believe this program is going to work so well is because our research has showed us that we are probably at a point in this country where prices are so high, people are willing to change their patterns, whether it's their shopping patterns by going somewhere else, whether it's their spending habits by buying a no-name brand tin of cream, as opposed to the Carnation they knew about all their life.
Mm-hmm.
But we're finding that people are willing to change their habits. And so a slight decrease in price or a slight variety could make a lot of difference in the market.
Listen, I tried the corn chicken. I tried it.
What is corn chicken?
You got see, that's what I say, and you ain't reached that point
yet,
sir.
No, you got to educate me.
So I think in the midst of the pandemic, but then prices rising and dropping, new sources being identified, this product showed up on the shelf called corn chicken. But let's go to the phone line. When we get back from the phone line, I can tell you about my adventures in yumminess.
Okay.
Good morning, caller.
Hey, Aaron.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm afraid to hear what a corn chicken is, but okay. That is,
yes, ma'am.
What I wanted to ask you, right?
Yes, ma'am.
You have like a big chain, food store chain, right? Mm-hmm. And I would go in the east or the west, and I would say, I would go to inner city, and that same chain would have a difference in prices on that same item. How would that be affected? In these, I mean, I don't want them to say, okay, this is the price for my store, but still, because different locations have different prices, will each location have its own price listing so I could know to go here or go there rather than where I was going?
Yes, so in short, I think you're asking about the price comparison portal that we're going to...
But also, if a business is participating in this program, can they continue that policy, right? So, like, some stores... The price may vary. I don't have a problem with the price being a little cheaper in the inner city. I understand that part, right?
I understand. No, it don't be cheaper.
I know, but I'm saying if it were cheaper, I would understand that. But if it's more expensive, I'm a little concerned, right? So big stores say that they carry the same price on items across stores, but they're allowed to have in-store specials.
Correct.
So there are items where you may see the price differ. But if a business is participating in the National Trade Diversification Program, does that shift the way that they have to price across jurisdictions in the archipelago?
So we'll say this, and you may not like the answer, but we are not in the business of dictating to the stores and the private sector what their prices should be. There is a breadbasket item list that the government says this is what the price has to be, or this is the ceiling for the price. And so that will be maintained. But as far as having in-store specials and prices at different locations, businesses would still be able to do that. However, those participating in the program, they would still need to meet those minimum criteria of passing on the cost savings to the consumer. Mm-hmm. And again, depending on the product, it may be different. The margin that's allowed may be different depending on the product. We also take into consideration such as sometimes a store is further out, and so you may need to increase the price because of the additional logistics to get products to a particular store. Mm-hmm. So we allow for that. So we're not going to mandate certain prices, but we certainly are going to enforce that the savings that we've allowed you to have or that you got through this program, you're going to have to pass that on to the consumer.
Absolutely. It turns out we are all out of time, sir.
Okay.
We have to have you back. I mean, I know you've been on Morning Blend and you are making the rounds. It's a wonderful conversation, very informative. The next time we meet, I want to explore the ways that civil society can intersect and participate in this program. Caller, I'm so sorry, we're all out of time.
But I just want to plug the event for tonight and tomorrow for the last time. So anyone interested in this program, entrepreneurs who think you can take advantage of it, business owners, even members of the general public, if you want information, SBDC location on Gladstone Road, the Old Fields Building, tonight and tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. Come and find out more information. Spread it on to your friends who might be able to take advantage of this.
Absolutely. If I was a coconut vendor, I'd be selling coconut water and coconut meat all
the time. Listen, you could buy more coconut water from other countries as well and add that to your selection on the road.
We're all out of time. Thank you so much, Senator Barry Griffin from the Office of the Prime Minister and the National Trade Commission. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Newry is up next. Oh boy, Halloween is almost here, sir. You have a great day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.